Welcome to the Responsible Management Podcast from the University of Bradford School of Management. This is a podcast for members of our Knowledge Transfer Network, where we talk about all sorts of issues that are of relevance and importance to small businesses here in the UK and more widely. In today's podcast, I'm joined by three great contributors, and we're going to be talking about responsible fintech in a crypto world. My name is David Spicer. I'm the Director of Business and Community Engagement here at Bradford, and I'm delighted to be hosting the podcast today. Our first contributor is Esther Mallower. Esther is Head of Tech Policy at ICAEW. She previously worked in Technology Internal Audit at Willis Towers Watson, where she focused on information and cybersecurity and operational resilience in the Technology External Audit Team at Deloitte, where she qualified as an ICAEW Chartered Accountant. Our second contributor is Marisa Minat. Marisa is Associate Professor in Finance and Economics here at the University of Bradford and a fellow chartered accountant. She founded the Responsible Fintech Research Group here at Bradford, and her research interests include risk, governance, valuation, and taxation in relation to cryptocurrencies and digital assets. She was a visiting fellow at the London School of Economics and Political Science, where she completed a book published by Routledge on cryptocurrency risk and governance challenges. Both Esther and Marisa are steering group members of the ICAEW Digital Assets Working Party as well. And our third contributor is Oliver Nelson-Smith, who recently joined ICAEW as a technical policy manager, where he's responsible for supporting ICAEW's technology policy agenda in areas such as AI, digital assets, cybersecurity, and emerging technology. He previously worked at UK Finance and the City UK, where he led the work on crypto, including the City UK's responses to the government's crypto regulation and the digital pound papers. So some great expertise in the room. Delighted you can all join us this afternoon. As you know, our focus is on responsible management. We're going to talk about crypto and digital currency in that kind of context. Perhaps we can start with a slightly broader question about what does responsible management mean for you? Esther, if I can come to you first.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. So for me, responsible management is about understanding how your actions as an individual or as a business impact other stakeholders. Now, those stakeholders could be your customers as a business, but it could also be society more generally. And it's about directing the actions of the company in order to do the right thing by your stakeholders. So thinking about making sure that your actions benefit stakeholders. So not just focusing on the business goals, but thinking about the impact of that on the wider ecosystem.
Brilliant. Marisa, you're nodding.
I will agree with what has been said by Esther, but I would like to add further to that in responding to your question, Dave. I would like to take a broad and interdisciplinary perspective in defining the scope of responsible management, which is obviously a challenge to all of us, especially in walking the talk. It is interdisciplinary in the sense that I will consider insights from multiple disciplines as a source of knowledge to find a plausible solution to a particular management problem or issue. And this is what I did when I formed a responsible fintech research group at the University of Bradford, where I included not only colleagues from management stream, but also science stream, so that we can enrich our knowledge. The challenge in responsible management is how do we take a balanced approach by weighing up not only the costs versus benefits to us, but how to derive a decision or solution that is fair to all stakeholders.
Great, thank you. Oliver, I'm assuming you're not going to argue for a different perspective?
Yeah, I fully agree with Marisa. It'd be hard to argue her point, and likewise with Esther. I think the only other sort of metric, the other axis that I would add to all of this is accountability. Being accountable for what these decisions that you've done are. As Marisa pointed to, there's a lot of complexity behind making responsible decisions, particularly for businesses. And it's wrong to expect that we will get it right every single time. But what the right thing to do is to be able to have the introspection to recognize where things have gone wrong and the will to work out why and the intention to do better than the following time.
Yeah, it's not always about getting it right. It's about doing it in the right way at the right time and having the right intentions and learning from those as well. That's great. Thank you all. So our focus is on cryptocurrencies, financial technology, digital assets today. For the uninitiated, what are these and why is this a responsible management issue?
There's a lot of aspects to that question. I mean, crypto assets, digital assets are virtual products or assets that have been put onto the internet that can be traded and are of some level of fungibility. It's a responsible management issue because there's obviously been a number of failures within that market over the last couple of years, from exchanges to the coins, the currencies themselves, as they've been developed. The ecosystem has also become somewhat of a hotbed for scams and fraud, potentially even some money laundering considerations and ways for countries and companies and individuals to skirt around sanctions as well.
So it's things like Bitcoin and other digital currencies. It's all those potentially hidden assets that are held in virtual environments. And there's one set of kind of governance issues, if that's the right thing, from a kind of control and kind of monitoring perspective. So I guess this is an issue that's wider than a single firm. Who are the stakeholders in this, and what roles do they play?
There's obviously the companies that are involved in the activities relating to cryptocurrencies. So issuing cryptocurrencies, mining them, the custodians of the cryptocurrency, and the exchanges that facilitate the exchange of the cryptocurrency. So that's one group of stakeholders, I guess. And then there's those that are impacted by cryptocurrency activities. So you've got investors, and those could be businesses, they could be individuals. And then, as I mentioned before, around the impact of cryptocurrency more broadly on the economy, then you start thinking about wider society as well being stakeholders. You mentioned ICAW, so yeah, of course we're stakeholders as well. And more from, I guess, a regulatory perspective, so overseeing how our members are accounting for or auditing cryptocurrencies, but then also national regulators, governments, auditors, that's another group of stakeholders. And then you've got the advisors, so the people that are giving the businesses advice on cryptocurrencies. And that includes groups like accountants, who again would be our members, but also lawyers and technology specialists. So as you can see, it's quite a broad range of stakeholders.
I would add also that it's because these currencies exist purely within the digital realm, that there's international bodies and standard setters that will have to play a key role, partly because there's any company or a minter of these digital assets is not constrained by whatever region has implemented some rules or some legislation or even police forces. It's in theory, you being a UK customer could be buying coins that have been generated from someone in any other country in the world that has an internet connection. And your protections, at least for national institutions and governments, only go so far as the border you exist in.
I would like to acknowledge Malaysian Institute of Accountants for their active role of their trust body in funding research in crypto area. And as what Esther has also outlined earlier, the ICAW is now catching up, especially with the creation of a digital assets working party early this year. And on behalf of the University of Bradford, we were delighted for ICAW support for Res FinTech event that we hosted at the Chartered Accountants Hall last summer. I believe there is a lot more accountants can do in promoting public interest in this area, especially looking from a standard setting perspective, which I think works are still ongoing in this area.
Great, thank you all. So it's very much an evolving landscape. These are relatively new concepts that we're still learning about how to use them and kind of use them effectively. And I think, Oliver, you alluded earlier to some of the challenges and issues that that have kind of come out of that kind of in the past. So yeah, if I could perhaps come to that as a question, what are those challenges? I mean, you've talked about the transnational nature, crypto assets, and the fact that you might be investing but not know where those are generated. Thinking perhaps about some of those failures or challenges that we've had in the past, what are the lessons we can learn from those, and what are the challenges that we need to be addressing? I guess, what are you working on in that working party?
Well, I've never attended one of the working parties, so I think Esther or Marita might be a better place to talk about the challenges that are being addressed there. But at least as I see it, the challenges are slightly down to the nature of the cryptocurrencies themselves and how they've been built. There's some here around, Esther alluded to the volatility. Many of them don't necessarily have any assets or backing behind them. This means obviously that they change value quite a lot, so investors risk their cash. Quite often there was a period of quite a lot of scam coins is what they were called, but basically that someone would mint a cryptocurrency, push it and try to sell it to as many investors as possible. But then of course eventually the value ends up going to zero because it's usually tied to some other project and never ends up being delivered, sort of as a funding drive for something else. And this person can run away with investors' money, which leads to the regulatory issue that there's regulatory challenges because the regulation and the regimes around crypto assets are still quite immature and are developing, depending on where you are in the world. And of course, that affects the extraterritorial nature or the sort of global nature of the internet and how these things can be transferred.
I think a challenge for cryptocurrencies and crypto assets more generally is that it can be quite complicated to identify what the substance of the asset is. So it can look like it's one thing, but then in terms of how it's being used in substance, it can be something that's different. And so when it comes to governance, that can be a real challenge in terms of knowing how to govern an asset that you're not clear on what the form of it is. I think also another challenge around governance is around culture of organizations that operate in this space. Quite often they're startups and they spin up quite quickly, and they don't always have the foundations from a governance perspective in terms of things like documentation and recording of transactions that are happening. So that culture kind of lends itself to cause more of an issue in terms of things going wrong and not being able to have transparency into what's happening and to therefore govern it effectively.
Great.
Thank you. May I add, in terms of the challenges, at the most fundamental level, it's about identifying what are these crypto assets or cryptocurrencies. I think it is important to make it clear here that cryptocurrencies are a subset of crypto assets. And crypto assets can be viewed as a subset of digital assets. You know, digital assets basically have a much broader scope. And in terms of technical definition, I think Esther has defined that, you know, using the common definition used in standard literature. But I will simplify them all as simply computer codes with speculative values. Also, I think it is important to understand that cryptocurrencies, which are the subset of crypto assets, were invented to be used as money or medium of exchange and store of value. But until today, many countries have not accepted them as legal tender. There are only two places, El Salvador and Central African Republic, where they have accepted Bitcoin as legal currency or money. Hence, the term currency being used next to crypto can be largely misleading, you know, especially from the perspective of less sophisticated investors, because these things are not yet widely accepted as currency or money. So therefore, regulators in the UK, including the Financial Conduct Authority and the HM Treasury, often coined the term crypto assets instead of cryptocurrencies to minimize the risk of public misunderstanding, which is a good move, I think, in the UK.
That's really interesting. There's so much in that to go at. So we're in essentially an entrepreneurial industry with a new, you know, I'm translating it into language I understand, which is selling a new product. That product is not fully understood by the consumer, but there's high demand for that product because it's perceived as having value. I know people that are investing in crypto. You say to them, why? And they go, well, shouldn't I be? Because it's the big new thing. And I'm like, that's not an investment strategy I'm particularly on board with personally, but you go, mate. So where I'm coming to with that is about the education piece. Yeah, so thinking particularly around consumers, are we doing enough to educate consumers? And what are we doing to educate consumers?
I think everyone is learning in this emerging area. I will say consumers should educate themselves, because we cannot expect only the regulators to do their bit. Most importantly, consumers, especially the young generation, should educate themselves about how to be a responsible consumer or investor by being clever in resource allocation. So this is obviously related to responsible management in terms of resource allocation. And I will advise them to build up investigative mind, read and learn about behavioral finance and how people can get scammed or cheated in financial world, and try to understand the unintended consequences of being impatient, especially in consuming or in buying things that we do not know, or we don't even not sure how they will benefit us.
I completely agree with Maritza, because there can be some level of public education that can be done, whether that's by the government or by other bodies. But I think at the end of the day, there's still responsibility on the consumer themselves to understand what they're investing in. And that's not different to any other investment. I think a good rule of investing is to understand the product that you're investing in, understand the risks associated with it, and make sure that you're comfortable taking that level of risk, and comfortable if the worst was to happen, that you're not, for example, losing your whole life savings, but you're investing an amount that you're comfortable with the downside of the risk happening. So yeah, I agree that consumers should really look to try and understand the basics of cryptocurrencies. And if there is a particular one that they're looking to invest into, again, try and dig a little bit deeper to get information. So for example, we have cryptocurrencies that are labeled as stable coins. And in that case, it's helpful for the investor to try and understand what makes the coin stable. Because we've seen examples of where stable coins stand out not to be that stable, because they weren't actually pegged to real currencies, but were rather being pegged to other cryptocurrencies. So yes, I think it's about getting that information, getting comfortable that they understand how what they're investing in works and the level of risk associated with it.
I think there's the Financial Services Compensation Scheme earlier this year did research on consumer attitudes towards crypto. I think they found that a third of consumers at least claim to understand it. So it's much better than it might have been 10 years ago, 5 years ago. So the education piece is happening by osmosis, whether governments or firms happen, because there's curiosity. And as you say, with investments, I think most people understand in principle that they should be interested in investing in it. The only, and I fully agree with Esther Miritz's points, the other thing that I would encourage anyone who's considering it and who might be listening is to educate yourself on the safety nets that are available to you. Financial services is heavily regulated. There's a lot of safety nets that happen to your deposit account, your, if you went to invest in stocks and shares or an investment savings account. Each one of these has its own safety nets that capture it, and it's worth educating yourself on those, and also educating yourself on what you would do in the event that something goes wrong. Yeah, so it's not just educating yourself on what you're getting into, but also educating yourself on what avenues and things you might have in the event that something goes wrong.
I'm just cutting into the podcast to tell you a little bit about the offer that we have for businesses locally as part of the business and community engagement support. We have our Knowledge Transfer Network, that's regular networking events where you can come on campus, meet like-minded people, hear from some of our and leading industry experts. We have our Bradford Business Challenge projects, where we have students coming out and working with you and supporting the work that you do. We have our consultancy clinic, where we have students delivering on short-term small projects for businesses as well. There's also lots of ways that you can engage with and interact with our students as guest lecturers, as mentors on some of our entrepreneurship programs, and through involvement in the curriculum. And equally, from a research perspective, we can work with you on collaborative research. If you think there's something we can help with, please reach out to us at BACE, that's base, BACE, at bradford.ac.uk. Thank you, and now back to the podcast. It's an interesting dynamic, isn't it? Because that risk-return profiling of any investment doesn't go away, does it? It's how well understood the risk and return is with these kind of assets and this kind of market in a evolving regulatory framework and all of those complexities that come with that. And I guess that's, to me, the obvious kind of next question about that, you know, regulation. Is the regulation keeping pace? Are we getting to a point where regulators are up to speed in discharging their responsibilities to protect public interest, or is there, you know, still more work to be done in that regard?
I think it is an open secret that regulators are often playing catch-up in regulating financial innovations. There were cases where it took too long to regulate due to perhaps preferred approach of wait and see, of course, a limited resource as well. Bear in mind that crypto market has started taking shape after financial crisis 2008. But the FCA's guidance on crypto assets was published only in 2019. And only this year that we have the HMT's consultation on future financial services regulatory regime for crypto assets. UK consumers will have, hopefully, greater protection through crypto asset financial promotions regime. According to this regime, crypto asset firms' marketing must be clear, fair, and not misleading, and to be labelled with prominent risk warnings, and must not inappropriately incentivize people to invest. And this rule will apply to firms wherever they are based globally, and hopefully will help strengthen how people are protected from the high risk associated with these assets.
To add maybe a bit of flavour, it's within the first day of the promotion regime extending to crypto companies, there were nearly 150 breaches or notices given out to firms that were advertising without permission to do so, or perhaps even in a way that was promising returns where they shouldn't have been. I think it's also, I mean, I'm sympathetic to regulators because they're all, at least financial regulators, have a huge scope of regulation. The FCA has 50,000 firms already under its responsibility, which is a lot of companies to be keeping tabs on and supervising. These firms also have to approve senior managers, they have to approve products, they have to approve changes in control. There's a huge number of process that has to go through regulators. And so you would be somewhat sympathetic, and you could, actually, to add a bit more to that, it's, you can see at least in FCA operating data that they're struggling already to meet statutory standards for how quickly they can process existing applications for senior managers, for example, or for firms to be authorized to do business in the UK. There is a lot of sympathy here because it's, you know, a lot of that has got to do with resourcing. It has to do with how has regulation evolved. The scope of financial regulation has creeped quite a lot since the financial crisis and continues to expand. That's not to say that it's a bad thing, but it's that while conceptually regulation is a good idea, you also need the manpower and the systems and the technology even to support that expansion, because otherwise it's just a conceptually nice idea on a piece of paper.
Yeah, I think that's similar to what I was thinking, Oliver, that it's our resourcing point, and because of that, regulators often have to prioritize. And with a topic like cryptocurrencies, a lot of times the decision is around how much it's being used, what percentage of the overall economy it's accounting for, and unfortunately, it takes high profile, high loss events to bring the potential risks to the forefront. And that's, I think, what's happened with cryptocurrencies and crypto assets more broadly. So as Maritza said, it's quite often that regulators are playing catch up, and it's usually a point of, let's wait until it's worth investing the resources in something. And usually by that point, quite a lot may have gone wrong. I think the other thing I was going to mention as well is that although crypto assets specific regulation is under development, there are a lot of principles that apply to other financial assets that companies that are involved in the crypto space could be employing. So if you think about things like making sure that client assets are separated from the company's own assets, that being an example, things like AML. So there are requirements that apply to crypto assets, and where crypto companies are responsible, those are things that they could be doing. I think, again, unfortunately, sometimes due to resourcing, and I've seen this from being an auditor previously, you kind of employ your resources towards what has to be done in terms of it's regulated and it's being monitored, and not necessarily on what sort of risks you should be thinking about and managing.
I would add one thing here. Is we're sort of saying that regulation is coming, but very slowly, and obviously lots of failures and things have had to happen in order for it to be prioritized. But I think that's also the way that regulation has always happened, is that quite often you do need high profile things to go wrong so that there's something to analyze and see what's gone wrong. An example for those who might be less familiar with the world of finance is that if you and your household probably has one set of rules on how to play Monopoly, but when you play it with friends or with other families, the case might be that there's completely different house rules that get added. There's some similar basic rules that apply, which is probably very early financial regulation that's pretty common all over the world, but that you end up having some of these individual house rules that are designed to stop things that have gone wrong with the way the game has been played in that household before, whether it be to speed up the rate of pace of the game or to get rid of some of the bits that might just take forever, like buying all the properties on it, lacking a tight definition that they make everyone who might want to innovate in the space in a way disincentivized to. They kind of have to happen when there is things that have gone wrong to be looked at, to be analyzed, to be learned from. I'm going to be arguing myself a little bit here, but also many of the risks that we've talked about are not novel. They're not new to crypto assets. They exist with anything that's got to do with money.
As a kind of key lesson from the conversation, in some respects, that none of this is necessarily new. It's about the kind of principles that we should be applying when we're talking about any form of financial asset or any form of investment. I mean, I'm conscious our core audience are SMEs. They're making choices about investment and development as well. And with that in mind, are there any particular challenges for small and medium-sized enterprises in dealing with this, or is it the same set of challenges, they're just probably a different risk profile because of the kind of business that they are? I don't know what you guys think.
Maybe I can share some findings from my recent research. We found that out of 41 FCA registered crypto asset companies, 16 of them disclosed to be holding crypto assets, with 12 have total assets less than 43 million euros, which in my understanding qualified to be classified as SMEs in UK government's definition. If you are an expert, yeah, perhaps you can confirm.
It's one definition, yes.
Okay. And only 9 of them have their accounts audited because they are exempted on the basis on size and some other factors. So I think this poses a challenge from responsible management perspective. I would suggest for the directors of these firms to take initiative to have their accounts audited so that they can benefit from experts on how to properly account cryptos and improve governance practice to ensure sustainability of their businesses and for the public interest.
So it's a responsibility on the directors of those, let's be honest, medium-sized businesses that are falling below certain regulatory or governance requirements, that actually you'll be in a stronger position if you do demonstrate that you are delivering these things. Esther, Oliver, would you recognise that?
I think that's certainly true, that you should be having, I think there's a broader diligence point, I think is the thing, is that you should be treating these things. If you want your business to be involved with them, that is a business decision for you to make. But again, like much in the way that we were giving advice to consumers, I think there's an element here of educate yourself, think about who it is or what company it is that you're going to get involved with, who might be your wallet provider. Try to be sure that, again, they have accounts and things that actually report on everything, and that there is responsible management behind them. And likewise, consider to yourself why you're getting in, again, why you're getting into them now. Maybe you can wait a little bit longer so that there's a bit more time for the regime, for a regulatory regime to kick in, where you might have more protections and a bit more, there might be a bit more resilience within the market.
What I was going to add as well is that for SMEs, a challenge could be, we've talked about taking existing requirements that you have and thinking about the principles of those for crypto assets. I think the challenge for SMEs might be, and I alluded to this earlier, is perhaps not having as many standardized processes and strong governance all the time. So it can be tricky to fit crypto assets into a governance framework that isn't as mature. And that could be, as Maritza mentioned, around not having the same level of requirements in terms of audit or other requirements around that. The other thing I was going to mention is around resourcing. Again, for SMEs, they might not necessarily have the amount of time, energy, resources to really focus on crypto assets specifically. For bigger organizations, they can, you know, set up a function specifically looking at crypto assets and the risks around that.
Brilliant. Thank you. I think there's some fundamental points there, isn't there, about education, about regulation, about your own governance and risk profile, and understanding the resource implications of any financial decision, but particularly so in this environment. That's been a really interesting kind of discussion. For a final question, I'm going to just shift our pace slightly. Regular listeners will know this is coming. But as our final question, I want to ask you about your management hero, your management heroine. That could be somebody personally, somebody professionally, somebody that might have been a mentor or a supporter for you in your career.
I have given this a long thought. And to be honest, I do not think I have one. For one reason, you know, despite many success stories in the world, we are still living in a situation where the wealth or resource is concentrated in the pockets of the few. And no one has successfully remedied this unfortunate situation. So that person who is able to do that will be my management hero.
Oh, you've got high expectations. Yes. I wouldn't expect any less.
So I'm still looking for them.
Brilliant. Thank
Fingers
you.
Crossed. Yeah.
I do think, Maritza, I thought I'd been really clever. I was also going to say that my answer is not really anyone, because I personally have a couple of things. One is that I've found over my time that you learn more from the mistakes and bad habits of managers more than you do the good bits. So while it'd be nice to have a management hero, the things that actually help me or have helped me the most are the things that have not necessarily made them heroes. The second thing also is that I don't really like the concept of heroes. I think it's sort of idolizing individuals for whatever reason leads to plenty of mistakes. The best version that you can be is the version of yourself and not necessarily of trying to emulate or be more like someone else. With that in mind, though, you know, I've had plenty of very good bosses, Esther included. So maybe I'll just say Esther to add some originality.
I quite like the idea of a management anti-hero. Definitely, Oliver. I'm going to steal that one, I'm sure. Esther.
Well, clearly my standards are a lot lower than Maritza and Oliver's, because I actually do have one. And this was a partner at my first job at Deloitte. Now, being new to auditing, accounting, you sometimes get a bit afraid of asking questions for fear of looking like you're, I don't want to say the word dumb, but like asking dumb questions. But actually, what they said was that you're an intelligent person. If something's not making sense to you, there's a reason it's not making sense. So I think that's been really useful for me in my career, both as an auditor and in my role at the moment. And the things we've been talking about around understanding cryptocurrencies and how they work, usually when you have questions around understanding something, it could be that actually something is wrong. So I think that critical thinking and being comfortable in speaking up and asking questions has served me really well. And yeah, for that reason, I think they're a management hero who's influenced me.
Perhaps, Dave, you know, as a celebration of the first time you had three guests on, you could let listeners know who your management hero is.
Oh, exactly.
You're torturing us with that kind of question.
I have been waiting for somebody to ask me that question. I mean, I have a couple of examples in mind. One very much personal. As an early career academic, a colleague here who was very helpful and very supportive in my career, in helping me understand my role and my contribution and navigate some of those early career challenges that anybody can face in any environment. And still somebody I talk to on a very regular basis, though he's kind of long retired, and he'll probably be listening to this and he'll know who he is. I'm massively grateful for his mentorship and his support and friendship as an early career academic. On a sort of a more, you know, with my academic head on, I came back to university to do an MBA, having been a practicing manager for a few years, because I figured there would be somebody that might be able to tell me how to do it properly, because I seemed to not be very good at it, or making mistakes and not understanding why. And I remember reading Charles Handy, Understanding Organization, and Handy writing about the practice of management basically being unknowable. And actually, you know, the challenges, particularly of managing people, and how you can do exactly the same thing in two different situations and get two different outcomes. And I actually found that quite liberating. That actually, we're here to better ourselves. We're here to explore and understand. We're not here necessarily to get it right. And that's a great mindset to have. So those would be my two. But I've been waiting for somebody to be brave enough to ask me that question, Oliver. So you definitely win the gold star of the first year of the podcast for that. That's brilliant. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. Yeah. I'd hate for you to have to change the question now.
No, I can say to anybody else, I've answered that now. Mm. Thank you all for your inputs, for your discussion, for your contributions. I've found it really interesting, enlightening, and I'm sure our listeners will have found it great as well. So if they want to reach out to you, Maritza.
My information is on the university's website. I have a dedicated webpage there, and you can also reach me through LinkedIn and on X.
Thanks, Dave. If anyone wants to reach me, they can contact me through LinkedIn. I'm sure my name will be in the podcast description and it will be the same on LinkedIn.
Great. Thank you, Oliver. Esther?
Yeah, for me as well. Reach me on LinkedIn. Same name.
Great. Thank you. If you want to reach out to me, it's Dave P. Spicer on LinkedIn. It's at Dave P. Spicer or at Brad Management to follow the School of Management on the socials. If you want to email us, it's BACE, Business and Community Engagement, @bradford.ac.uk. Thank you all again. Really stimulating discussion. And please join us next time. Thank you. If you've got a project that you'd love to get done, but you're struggling with the time and resources to do that, that's something that we can help you with. Bradford Business Challenge projects are where we get our students to do, as part of their dissertation, a piece of applied management work for a business like yourself. Either one of our final year undergraduate or MSc students, with the support of an academic mentor, will be able to work on that project for you. There's no cost for you as a business. All we ask for you is to set up with us that project, give us a kind of outline brief that the student will go away and work into a full proposal for you, and then you'll be meeting and liaising with them and their academic advisor to get that project delivered. Because we have multiple students doing these over the course of the year, there's usually a group of students looking for any project at one time. So if that's something that you're interested in and you'd like to know more about, please reach out to us at BACE, base@bradford.ac.uk.